chance of rain, most likely late this morning or early this afternoon. A high today of 83. Looking at the radar, the rain is to our north and west and moving in a northeasterly direction, so it's staying well above us at this point. Tonight, cloudy and cool, 80% chance of rain again. Overnight, low 63. Look at this, tomorrow, Thursday, partly sunny, cooling off. Tomorrow's high 70, Friday's high 70, Saturday's 68, Sunday 70. Here are the numbers now. Wind from the southwest at 10. It is 76 degrees in Racine, 78 in Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. Coming up on 8:11, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in four easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers available at carthage.edu/admissions/transfer. Support also comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2018, a unique shopping experience time and time again. And that's what brings you back, jackandrea.com. And we welcome you to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Gregory Berg. Our topic on today's morning show is anger. And we are going to be exploring what anger is and the ways in which it can so easily go out of control, and also explore some strategies for managing it. And we are especially focusing on anger in men. And at the risk of overgeneralizing, it does seem that many men in our current society especially have very serious issues with anger. And the author of the book at hand, Beyond Anger, has wrestled with issues of anger himself in his own life. Dr. Thomas J. Harbin is a clinical psychologist, and he specializes in working with angry men and helping them to come to grips with their anger and trying to find ways in which they can keep anger from becoming a destructive, counterproductive force in their life. And Dr. Harbin has written a very, very thoughtful and fascinating book called Beyond Anger, A Guide for Men: How to Free Yourself from the Grip of Anger and Get More Out of Life. It's published by Dacapo Lifelong Books. Dr. Thomas J. Harbin, we welcome you to the morning show.
Good morning. Thank you.
I'm very grateful for this opportunity. I wonder if we could, if you don't mind, begin with the personal. You touch on this certainly in your book, the fact that anger has been an issue with you, at least in the past, and maybe to some extent this is still a demon of sorts that you have to work to keep at bay or keep under proper control. I would really appreciate it if you would share with our listeners whatever you think is important for us to know about your own personal journey when it comes to this matter of anger.
Sure. I think, first of all, you hit it right on the head when you said, or when you wondered whether or not it's an ongoing issue. I think for most angry guys, it is rare for a guy to be able to say, yep, I've dealt with it, it's in the past. It's going to be an ongoing issue to deal with, and hopefully less of an issue, you know, as guys move forward in their lives. For my own situation, I was a pretty angry kid. I was a pretty angry young adult, and it was in my, I'd say, late 20s, early 30s, when I started realizing that not everybody felt the way I felt, that other people seemed to be happier in their lives, and I started to take stock of what I was doing to possibly contribute to my own unhappiness. In addition, on the day of the morning of my 10th anniversary, my wife told me that, and this is a quote, if the next 10 years are going to be like the last 10 years, I'm out of here. So that rattled my cage, and I realized that I had to start taking things seriously and deal with my own anger.
And I'm just curious, was your brand of anger a very sort of outward anger? I mean, was it a throwing a lamp at your wife kind of anger? Or when you were young, was it beating other kids up kind of anger? Or what was the face of your own particular anger? I ask that because one of the most interesting parts of the book is where you talk about recognizing the many faces of anger. Anger
right.
can look like a lot of different things. What did your anger look like?
Well, let me start that off by saying that I'm a large guy. I'm 6 foot five and used to be an athlete. But the physical expression of my anger came out on the football field. It came out in other places. I didn't get into fights. I didn't physically abuse my wife. My version of it was more was verbal. I was continually arguing. I was very skillful at dominating and humiliating other people verbally, and that was sort of the form that mine took.
I appreciate the fact that you touch on your own kind of personal journey. And the last question along this line is, I wonder if you could just say a word about the role that anger tends to play in your life today. And as you said, it tends not to be an issue that's ever shoved away in a drawer and not thought of again or dealt with again. But what is your own sort of personal journey been like once you realized that anger was a serious issue for you that really needed to be confronted?
I tell guys in my office all the time that until they start getting into dealing with their anger, they will have no conception of what a radical change in outlook it takes to deal with your anger. Depression is fairly easy to treat. Anxiety disorders are fairly easy to treat. But dealing with anger really involves a large shift in your whole outlook on life and your attitudes towards people and events. And it's really hard. It's difficult to contemplate how big of a shift it is until you've been through it. And for me, I would say that I've gotten through it. My anger rarely gets to the point where I think it's a problem anymore. I mean, for example, I had some pretty good road rage going, and when I started working down in Fayetteville, North Carolina, which is right near Fort Bragg, I realized that there were 40 or 50,000 guys out there that could break me in half without even thinking about it. And so I sort of used that to curb my road rage. But in general, I think that I've gotten things pretty well under control. I haven't gotten into trouble in a long time.
We are speaking with Dr. Thomas J. Harbin about his book, Beyond Anger, A Guide for Men. Two questions come up kind of about the book itself, even aside from its actual content. One of them is that this book was initially published in 2000. And what we're really talking about today, the book that I hold in my hand, is a new edition. Explain why you thought it was important for this book to be, in a sense, republished or re-released in a new edition.
There were a couple of reasons for that. The first one is a very practical one. When that book was written, it was published in 2000, but it took 8 or 10 years before it ever got to be a book. So really, at this point in time, the original version, lots of it is almost 30 years old. And so that was back before cell phones. It was really back before personal computers. I mean, there were just a lot of dated and obsolete references in there. So that was one reason. But also, when I started writing that, I was in my late 20s, early 30s, as you've noted, and now, 20 years later, you know, I'm a middle-aged, approaching elderly guy, and my perspective on male anger and on life in general has changed, and I thought that it might be valuable to put some of that perspective into a new edition. In addition, I think the climate in this country has changed drastically since that book came out. And those social and cultural differences, I think, also influence men's anger. So I wanted to work that those perspectives in as well.
And I'm glad. This is certainly a very timely book in many, many respects. How about the matter of anger in men versus anger in women? And I nowhere in your book do you ever say or even imply that women don't get angry or that women can have very serious anger issues themselves. But obviously you believe, and I think lots of people believe, that there is a real difference between the way most men experience, handle, express anger versus the way women interact with the emotion of anger. I would be really curious to hear where you think the most crucial differences are and also where those differences come from. That is, why men experience anger so differently than most women do.
I think that probably 80% of the experience and expression of anger between men and women is going to be about the same. The same thing, well, many of the same things make men angry that make women angry, and some of the expressions are the same. But I think one of the biggest differences is that men tend to be more physical in their expressions of anger. An overwhelming majority of the violent crime committed, certainly in this country and probably around the world, is committed by men. Men tend to be just more physical and more aggressive in general, and that that also colors their expressions of anger. So that's one big difference, is the difference in physicality. And I think one of the reasons for that is simply that men tend to be larger and more powerful than women, and so they are more able to take out their anger in physical ways than women, who, you know, run a greater risk of being abused if they tend to get physical. I also think that our cultures have grown up to encourage that type of expression in men. I mean, if you look back at some of the traditional movies, John Wayne, Vin Diesel, you know, the tough guys in the movies, it is allowed and encouraged in popular culture in many ways for men to be angry. Now that at least in movies is changing over the last few years, where we also have women superheroes who go around knocking heads. But for a long time, it was tacitly accepted that men were going to be physically violent, and that, I think, colored a lot of their expressions of anger.
We're speaking with Dr. Thomas J. Harbin about his book, Beyond Anger, A Guide for Men. One thing said early in the book that is important to say and probably worth saying again is that anger in and of itself is not a bad thing. At one point you write, anger is an emotion, just like any other emotion. Anger is not bad. Anger isn't good either. Anger just is. And a little later in that same passage, anger is energy. It has its uses. It mobilizes people to action. It helps get things done. And I'm so glad that you take the time to talk about anger in this respect, because I think it is so easy to think about anger only in the most negative of terms. And of course, most of your book is about anger in that respect. Not too much of your book is taken up with the matter of the usefulness of anger, or anger sometimes being a healthy thing. I would love to hear a little more from you on that, on the extent to which anger is a useful and healthy and normal part of our life, because I think that can help us better understand when anger becomes a problem.
Sure. I'm glad you found that part of the book, because I think it's an important one. Human beings have emotions, and anger is one of those emotions. And our emotions are there, first of all, to provide, I think, for a richer and more meaningful life than if we didn't have them. And that's certainly the case with anger. It's part of being a human being. What we worry about is our variables like how.
Oops.
What does he do when he gets angry? How long does it take him to get over it? Those are more the parts of anger that we worry about. But like you said, anger can be looked at as being energy driven, a form of energy, and that energy can be put to good uses. I think that many people in the civil rights movement were motivated by anger. I think many athletes are able to accomplish the rigorous training that they go through, driven in part by anger. I think a lot of people getting their advanced degrees, PhDs, MDs, law degrees, are channeling their anger in productive ways in many cases. So I think anger is energy, and one of the jobs of the angry guy is to learn how to channel that anger in adaptive ways.
In this same chapter called The Trouble with Anger, you point out some what you call anger's red flags. And these would be, I guess, warning signs that someone's anger is at least threatening to go beyond kind of the bounds of normal, healthy anger and becoming something else. And I think what's really important is that you go beyond the obvious. I mean, well, as you begin this chapter, you say, if you get into physical fights or lose your temper and get fired from your job, it's clear that your anger is out of hand. If you find yourself explaining your aggressive behavior, very often you are angry. If you have broken furniture, hit your wife or girlfriend, or accidentally injured yourself in a moment of anger, your anger is dangerous and potentially out of control. So, I mean, we all know that. What we don't all know is what you go on to talk about. That is the much less obvious signs of what you call maladaptive anger. Explore some of those for us, would you? Some of the less than obvious ways in which anger can manifest itself and maybe be a warning sign that something is amiss.
Sure. It's interesting to deal with angry guys on a regular basis, because so many of them have been angry for so long that they think that what they feel is normal. And they are surprised to learn that other people don't feel the same way and don't act the same way. And some of those differences are, I'd say, excesses of cynicism, sarcasm, needing to win arguments as opposed to having discussions. A lot of these things that guys just take to be normal parts of who they are, in reality, are probably indicators of excess anger. A lot of guys say, you know, I just tell things the way they are, and if people can't handle it, that's their problem. And I come back with, well, there are a lot of ways to say the same thing, and some of them are aggressive and insulting, and some of them are not, and you can get your point across the same way. I think that aggressive driving is often an indicator of anger. General distrust of most people and institutions is another indication of anger. So these are a lot of things that are not obvious, but that have sort of presented themselves to me over the years as being indicators of guys that could probably do with a reduction in their anger.
Right. And in some ways, you go even further in the third chapter of the book, which is titled The Man in the Mirror, Recognizing the Many Faces of Anger, in which you explore some of the ways in which anger plays out. And I think one of the things that is really interesting is when you, in a sense, pair up two very different ways in which anger can manifest itself in what you describe as the hostile man and the stuffer. Explain to our listeners what's going on there with the hostile man and the stuffer and how they both have anger issues.
The example I use in the book is in a workplace setting where there's a supervisor who is the hostile guy, and when he gets angry or frustrated, he's yelling and screaming at his subordinates and in general carrying on. And then one of the subordinates that has to endure all that, of course, he can't scream back or he'd lose his job. So he just sort of grinds his teeth together and takes it. But his anger sort of simmers along inside and, you know, probably leads to ulcers and stiff necks and other more subtle symptoms than the guy that yells and screams. So those are sort of two of the ways of crystallizing different forms of anger expression.
Right, and you go on to explore other sort of personality types like the whiner or the debater, and probably most serious of all, the abusive man, in which anger goes to that extent. And there's a chapter right after that called What Anger Thinks, in which you are, in a sense, kind of getting us inside the mind of someone with anger issues and what they might be thinking. What's interesting about that chapter is also that there are some real surprises there. I mean, that some of them are very, very obvious things, like it's my way or the highway. But then you say that sometimes people with anger issues, what they're feeling inside is, I'm so ashamed, or I'm worthless. And I think, at least at a glance, that doesn't make a lot of sense to us, to connect, for instance, feelings of worthlessness with feelings of anger. Can you help us understand the connection there?
Yes, I think that a lot of male anger is driven by what I call somewhere in the book, I forget where exactly, but a core sense or core feeling of inferiority. A lot of angry guys, if you get right down to it, don't feel like they measure up. They're not as smart as other people. They're not as accomplished as other people. Or it may not even be that specific. It may be something just as vague as the feeling that they're just not worth as much as other people. And it is a very small step from believing that I'm worthless to believing that other people think I'm worthless. And of course, one of the I'd say instinctive reactions to being insulted by another person is, of course, to get angry. So a lot of guys go around trying to, without realizing it, make up for what they think is their lack of value. They feel like they can never relax. They always have to be productive, can't ask for help, are uncomfortable with compliments. So there are a lot of subtle behaviors that stem from feeling the need to always be proving himself.
Hmm. Some of these sort of profiles of anger and what's going on inside some men's minds ties very nicely into something you talk about in the fifth chapter of the book, which is actually titled Relating Man to Man, in which you kind of get at the heart of what's sometimes behind anger and how anger can particularly play out between men. In this discussion, which is so interesting, I wish we had more time to be able to really explore it thoroughly, you talk at one point about the limited emotional vocabulary of many men and how this can be a real issue. And of course, particularly if we're talking about somebody with feelings of, for instance, worthlessness, if on top of it they have kind of a limited or stunted emotional vocabulary, that can be, in a sense, kind of a really toxic combination. Explain a little further, please, what you mean by a man's limited emotional vocabulary and the ways in which that can play out when we're talking about this arena of anger.
Sure. I'll give an example to start off with. A lot of times if I'm working with a couple that are having difficulties with their marriage, I'll give them each a piece of paper and ask them to write down every emotion that they've felt in the last week or month or some period of time. I'll give them a little bit of time to write that down, and then I'll take the woman's paper first and read it out, and it'll say, I felt love, I felt anger, I felt joy, I felt envy, I felt jealous. And then I'll take his, and it will be some version of, I felt good, I felt bad. And so all the positive emotions get lumped into a category called feeling good, and all the negative emotions get lumped into a category feeling bad. And that may seem like a trivial concern, but I don't think it is. I don't know how kids are taught in their social studies classes now, but when I was a kid, we were taught that people living in the Arctic areas of the world had, 10, 15 different words to describe snow, whereas we would have to say, sleety snow, wet snow, heavy snow. They had different words for those different types of snow. And what that does is, first of all, it allows them to describe snow at a more intimate level than the rest of us. But by being able to describe snow at that more intense level, it also allows them to experience snow at a more intense level. And it's the same thing with men's emotions. If they don't differentiate different versions of negative emotion, they all get lumped into the same category, generally anger. So if a man feels humiliated, instead of talking about the humiliation, he gets angry. If he gets physically injured, instead of talking about the pain and the fear that goes along with the injury, he gets angry. One of the worst arguments my wife and I ever had was sitting in the parking lot outside of the emergency room waiting for me to go in and get this cut on my hand sewed up. And there was no reason for me to be angry other than it hurt and I was angry and feeling vulnerable, but, couldn't talk about it.
In the next chapter of the book, you talk about the way in which anger can be a very serious complication in the relationship between men and women. And this is a really interesting chapter as well. And, of course, it touches on some of the darkest aspects of what we're talking about, namely the way in which abuse can occur in relationships in really terrible, terrible ways. One of the things that, as I read this chapter and explored some of the insights that you share, is I wonder how much this is complicated by the world in which we live, in which the kind of traditional roles of men and women are beginning to really blur more and more, although there are certainly plenty of households that still sort of abide by very traditional ideas of what the man does and what the woman does and what their relationship should be like. But obviously we are living in a world now where many of those distinctions, some that I think everybody would agree are relatively artificial or arbitrary, are starting to break down. And we don't have the man as the breadwinner and the woman in the kitchen nearly so much as was once the case. How much does that complicate this whole issue of anger in men? And how much does that complicate, for instance, your work in dealing with angry men?
I think that I think it's a significant issue that's going on in the country today. I am a baby boomer, which means that my father was in the World War II generation. And things were pretty cut and dried for them. What it meant to be a man was you went to work, you worked with your muscles, you brought home a paycheck. That was it. And everything else, pretty much, the house, the kids, everything else was managed by the wife. And for guys in my generation, we were raised by our fathers with that expectation, but then the rules changed. Somewhere along the line, fewer and fewer jobs required physical strength so that women can do virtually any job that men can do. And so men are left with the dilemma of trying to define what it means to be a man now. And women frequently make more money than their husbands or their boyfriends. So a lot of what it meant to be a man is currently in flux, and that is frustrating and demeaning for a lot of guys and fuels a lot of male anger.
We're speaking with Dr. Thomas J. Harbin, and his book is called Beyond Anger, A Guide for Men. Your book spends a lot of time not just talking about what is anger, where does it come from, how does it manifest itself, but you spend a great deal of time in the book talking about what can be done about it. And, of course, this folds nicely into what your own practice as a psychologist is all about. Before we talk about this portion of the book, I would love to know a little bit about your own practice and the experience you have of working with angry men. First of all, is this something that is sort of kind of the banner headline of your practice? I mean, is it Thomas Harbin's anger clinic or something? Or is this one of a number of things you do? And how does anger kind of fold into your entire life as a psychologist?
I have my practice in a fairly small town, so it would not be possible to make a living treating only angry guys. But it is a specialty. I get a lot of referrals for that. But I'd say my practice is about half-time traditional clinical psychology, depression, anxiety, with more angry guys than most people get. And then the other half, I do a lot of forensic work. I do a lot of psychological evaluations related to the legal system.
And what have you found through the course of your practice, I mean, in terms of working with angry men as we start exploring some of the strategies? By and large, are the strategies that have been in place and important for a long time, or are the strategies, in a sense, evolving with our evolving understanding of what anger is?
That's a great question. I would say that my primary approach to treating angry guys is what's known as cognitive behavioral therapy. And that, at the core of that approach to psychological treatment is the belief that dysfunctional or maladaptive thinking creates and supports negative emotion, whether it's anger, depression, anxiety. The link there is between the interpretations that men have of the world, the thinking habits that they get into, and that those thought processes tend to support the negative anger. Now, as I get older and as the culture changes and, society goes through its own evolutions, that approach has to be tweaked here and there, but by and large, that's my approach, is looking at the things that men say to each other, say to themselves and think about themselves.
Hmm. So I would love to explore just a couple of the things that you talk about in the second section of your book, which you call Anger Action Plans. And in the course of kind of talking about this, you utilize the term anger management, which we hear so much about and which we can kind of talk about very blithely. But in fact, you really unpack that and really help us understand what that's about and what is necessary for effective anger management to occur. How do you like to think of anger management?
I think that there are a couple of aspects to that. One aspect is that various institutions in our culture, the courts, the military, domestic violence agencies, have wanted to have something that they can use to try to alter the pattern of angry behavior of men. So, for example, we have had anger management classes, typically 10 one-hour sessions that the judge orders a man to undergo, or the Army orders a man.
This is a monthly test of the Southeast and South Central Wisconsin Emergency Alert System. In the event of an emergency, this system would bring you important information. This test is now concluded.
Unquote, manage anger. And I think for a lot of guys that, for some guys that's effective. For a lot of guys, I don't think it is, for a couple of reasons. The first reason is that most of the guys that are sent to those classes aren't there voluntarily. They're putting their time in. They don't buy in. And so it's unlikely that they're going to be successful. But more importantly for me, I think, is that it's much more difficult to deal with anger once it's out there, once it's out of the bottle, than it is to deal with the factors that come before anger. Learning how to deal with frustration, learning how to not be devastated by criticism, learning to deal with a sense of shame if one has a sense of shame. I think that approach, dealing with the precursors of anger, is generally more effective and less threatening for the guys than what we typically think of as anger management.
Right. In a sense, anger management comes too late in the arc, sort of the arc of development of anger, and you're talking about sort of understanding anger and attacking it in a sense at the root.
Well, I would think about it as I would rather make sure that my house doesn't have fire dangers in the first place than to rely upon the fire department to put out the fire once it started.
Right, exactly. And that's kind of the difference that we're talking about here. In the chapter called Stop Pulling Your Tail, you explore some of the ways in which someone who has anger issues can kind of think about things a little bit differently. And things like recognize your irrational thoughts. I mean, be honest about when you are thinking things or tying things together that just do not make sense, which is a mistake just about all of us make. And there are several others that are relatively obvious, yet nevertheless really valuable. I think the most surprising point in this chapter is when you advise someone to take happiness like a man. That is sometimes what can sometimes be at least an ingredient in a man's anger issues might be with the way they grapple with happiness of all things. Explain what you're talking about here.
That's counterintuitive, I think. But a lot of guys, going back to feeling like they don't measure up, a lot of guys don't believe, if you get right down to it, that they deserve to be happy. They are uncomfortable with compliments. They're uncomfortable with Christmas presents. They just are not comfortable accepting the good things that most people's lives have to offer. And if you're going to cut yourself off from the good stuff in life, then you know you're setting yourself up for continuing in your anger.
I especially want to talk about a section of the book called Keep the Garbage Out, in which I think you do a great job of exploring some of the specifics that can be going on in the mind of the so-called angry men. And I want to take just a little bit of time for this because I think this is really important. I think this is also a place in the book where the fact that you are a clinical psychologist really comes to the fore. And so, you know, you're not just some guy sitting in a chair thinking about anger, but as somebody who has really studied the human mind and how the human mind works, you're really using those kind of insights that most of us don't have to really help us understand what goes on in the mind of someone with anger. And one of those things is mind reading. You say a common misperception that many angry men have is, I know what you're thinking. And I'd never stop to think about that, but I think you are absolutely right about that. It is an assumption that is easy to make, and it can be a very destructive assumption to make. Tell us more about that, about the problems that can arise from this assumption that I know what you're thinking.
Well, I would say that mind reading takes two forms that get guys in trouble. The first one is, like you said, I know what you're thinking. And of course, since men have a negative bias in their thinking to start with, when they assume they know what another person is thinking, it's almost always negative. You know, they don't think, when they say to their wives, I know what you're thinking, they don't think that their wives are complimenting them in their mind. They think that they're insulting them in their mind. So it's a lack of objectivity, or a lack of balance, I guess I would say, between the positive and the negative, that leads men to think that not only can they read another person's mind, but that other person is thinking something negative about them. The second aspect of mind reading is some version of, I shouldn't have to tell you that I love you. You should already know. So I expect the other person to read my mind, and when they don't, and when my needs don't get met, that fuels my anger.
Hmm. That's such a great insight. I think that is so true, and it's true of even people who don't have anger issues that we're really talking about here, but I really appreciate that insight very much. You also say that in the minds of many so-called angry men is a tendency towards black-white thinking, that is, in your words, a tendency to simplify events, statements, or people into artificial categories. This, of course, happens all the time, and, of course, in this current political climate in which we're living, that seems to be absolutely rampant and just destructive to our democracy in so many ways. And I think, as you say, closely related to that is a tendency for overgeneralization. Explain how that can fuel anger in some really scary ways.
Overgeneralizing is attributing characteristics to a group of people based upon one specific or several discrete specific incidents. So, for example, where do we go with this? Since some women cheat on their husbands, therefore all women cheat on their husbands. Since some people want to fight with me, all people want to fight with me. So what it does is it sort of de-individualizes people, if that's a word, and turns people sort of into a faceless them. They are going to get you if you don't stand your guard. They are always going to get the promotion and I won't. So it causes the angry man not to treat people as individuals, but as sort of a generalized threat.
Hmm. So true. That plays out in so many different ways. And closely related to that is then what you call selective abstraction. And this is particularly destructive, it seems to me. You write, not only do angry men tend to overgeneralize from one small incident and make sweeping predictions, but they also tend to focus their attention almost entirely on the negative things in the world. This seems like a very serious issue that is all around us right now.
I think what I tell people a lot is 5 or 10% of stuff in life is bad. You know, you stub your toe, you get in a car wreck. 5 or 10% of stuff in life is good. You win the lottery, you get a compliment, and the other 80% is just regular. You know, you cut the grass, you pay the bills, but angry guys tend to devote 80% of their awareness to the 10% of stuff in life that's bad. And you know, I am not a believer in positive thinking. People aren't idiots. If things are bad, things are bad, and there's no reason not to acknowledge that. But what I think is a maladaptive habit that men get into is focusing 90% of their awareness on the stuff that's bad in life.
And, of course, right beyond that is catastrophizing, where we like to exaggerate just how bad things are, or some of us do. And then you go on beyond to talk about personalization and other ways in which we sort of misunderstand what happens to us and what can so easily take us to a really angry place. The subtitle of the 10th chapter, in a sense, is where we'll finish it, because in a sense, this is what the whole second half of the book is about. Watch for the storm. Stop your anger before it starts. What would be your closing words of advice for the angry man in terms of trying to do that, of trying to understand their anger, in a sense, its root causes, and getting at it before it gets out of hand? Because I think you're asking for something that's probably really difficult for somebody who has trouble understanding their own emotional selves and also a limited emotional vocabulary to even talk about it.
I think in closing, if that's what are we closing?
Pretty much, yes. Okay. I'm afraid, yeah.
Okay, I think that the first thing I would say is that one of the most difficult things for the angry guy to do is to acknowledge to himself, I've got too much anger. I got to do something about it. So that's the first thing. The second thing, I think, is for them to be open to changing their long-established habits of behavior and thinking. And that is a difficult thing to do. The belief in that other people are a threat, the belief of their own inferiority, the belief that they have to constantly be on guard. I think those are very difficult response sets for the angry man to change. But it is possible, and a lot of guys do get beyond their anger. I think I've pretty much gotten beyond mine. So I guess I would close with encouragement that if you find yourself dreading the next day, if you find yourself feeling as though other people have a better life than you, I would say get a hold of it and try to make some changes, because it is possible.
Absolutely. And I think your book does a wonderful job of laying out all kinds of specifics on the road to understanding anger better. And we should mention also that there is a special appendix to the book which deals with people who have been in the military and perhaps dealing with very specific and especially intense issues of anger. And I appreciate the information that is shared there as well. The book again is titled Beyond Anger, A Guide for Men, How to Free Yourself from the Grip of Anger and Get More Out of Life. This is its revised edition, published by Dacapo Lifelong Books. Dr. Thomas J. Harbin, I thank you so much for writing this book. I think it will be of tremendous value to many, many people, and even myself, someone who does not really live, I don't think, with serious anger issues. I feel like I have come away from reading your book with a better understanding of myself and of how anger works in all of our lives. So I'm glad I read your book, and I'm glad we could talk about it today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on your show.
This is WGTDHD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn.